everybody. Welcome to episode 13 of Home at Advantage. I am your co-host, Sam Herring, joined as always by my mainest man, Jude Swisher, the pride of State College, Pennsylvania. And sitting right in front of me through the great powers of technology is the great wrestling nomad, a.k.a. Daniel Roy Lobdell Jr.
What's up, buddy?
Our 13th episode, I'm super excited to have you on today, Nomad. It's a special thing because Jude and I started this podcast just because of FRL and what you guys do. So it's great to have you on.
Thanks, man. Looking forward to be here. Though I'm not the first Flow guy to be on. You guys had Bader on. That was an excellent episode. I hope if anybody who's listening to this one is a new listener, that they go back and listen to that one, because I thought it was an excellent episode you guys did with my man Bader, who sits right next to me every day.
Yeah. So
he's a great guy.
Hey, why stop and listen to just that one when you can go back and listen to all of them? We have them archived on Apple and Google and Spotify, a whole bunch of other places. So go listen, guys. Well, so Nomad, right off the bat, we're gonna lay a little foundation for who you are, for those of our listeners who might not know. So how did you decide to get into wrestling journalism? So obviously, yeah, you work at Flow, but how did you decide to go into journalism in general?
So somebody asked me this the other day, and it kind of goes back to when I was young, like when I was your guys' age and even probably a little younger, I would watch, you know, SportsCenter every night and every morning, and I read the paper like cover to cover whenever I could, especially on Sundays, you know, when I was home all day, and we didn't usually have sports on Sundays back then. And I just always found the coverage of sports to be really interesting, right? Like the whole process of storytelling and teaching people about sports and, you know, learning about new draft picks and all this stuff, right? So when I went to college, I went to James Madison University in Virginia, and I studied journalism there. And then when I came home back to Baltimore, I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland, I started helping my dad coach wrestling again at the high school where I wrestled. And I realized that there was this lack of international coverage, right? There's just nobody was talking about international wrestling, which I found very odd because it is the professional level. It is the NFL. It is the NBA of wrestling. And so I just found that very odd because when I was in high school, I had this like stack of brackets and articles from the old, I don't know if you guys even know this, but UWW used to be called FILA, right? FILA,
right.
From the old FILA website. And I was like, all right, well, they had these things when I was a kid, and that was, you know, in 2005. It's 2013 now. This information has to be out there somewhere. The internet is so much better. Everybody has phones now. You know, like it was starting to get to that point. Everybody has smartphones, and I said, "Well, I need to get this information to people. There's a hole in the marketplace." And it took me a little bit, but I came up with this name, the Wrestling Nomad, and then it kind of took off from there.
How did that name come into being? When did you decide, like, the Nomad?
It's such a lame story. Everybody asked me it. So.
I know this one.
Yeah, I think I've told you this. So my accolades aren't great, right? Like I wasn't a Division I wrestler. I wasn't a senior level wrestler. And in the wrestling world and in a lot of sports, right, your accolades tend to make your word carry a lot more weight, and rightfully so, because it means you've done something in the sport. However, I didn't think that it precluded me from being able to talk about the sport. But because my name didn't matter, I figured that I'm just going to create a persona or something, not necessarily to hide behind, but just because it's just, okay, here's this entity just spewing wrestling facts. It doesn't really matter who he is. He's just very informative, so let's follow him. And I thought, what makes somebody what do really good wrestlers do, right? They're nomads, right? Sam, where are you this summer? You're in Pennsylvania. You're hundreds of miles from home because you're trying to get better. And if you're really good, not only do you train and compete all over the country, you train and compete all over the world. And so right. I just thought that it was a really appropriate name for our community, and that I didn't think it was going to stick like this, but it has.
Yes, it has.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Did you love wrestling? Real quick, Jude. You wrestled when you were a youth, I assume, but when did you really develop that love? Did you love just the activity of wrestling, or were you a fan of the sport as well? I know there wasn't as much information. And when did it just become a huge passion of yours? Just the direct sport. You talked about reading the papers and stuff, but kind of specializing. When did that kind of happen?
Like I said, my dad was a wrestling coach, right? He was my high school coach. Right. He recently retired a few years ago. And my first trip outside of the house, I was born during the folk-style wrestling season, right, during the high school season. And after I got back from the hospital when I was a baby, my first trip outside the house when I was, I don't know, less than a week old, was to one of my dad's dual meets, right? And wow. there's pictures of me when I was, I don't know, probably 3 or 4. You know how at high school dual meets, right, there's the chairs kind of on either side of
right.
the mat, and, you know, the coach sits in one of the edge chairs, and there's a picture of me, like, kind of tugging on my dad's jacket, you know, telling him whatever a 3-year-old would tell their dad during a dual meet, you know. Maybe I was saying go top or bottom. I don't know. I probably wasn't. But yeah, it just goes back to that. And, you know, my grandfather is in the upstate New York chapter of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, not the big National Hall of Fame, but, if you look on the website, you know, they have certain chapters for every state, right? There's ones for Pennsylvania and Tennessee that you guys can look up from your own home states. So I don't know. It just goes back to that, right? My dad wrestled in college and my grandfather was around the sport for basically his whole life. And so, I don't know, it just seemed natural, right? Wrestling is a family sport, and I took up the family business, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, how'd you get in with Flo?
So, how I got in with Flo was Twitter, right? I would say around the time of it's so funny to me when I talk about things, because aren't that long ago, but I have to remember how old you guys are.
Right.
You guys remember the 2015 World Championships were in Las Vegas.
Yeah. I don't
know if you guys were aware of that. And with it being in Las Vegas, the whole wrestling world was there, right? The whole American wrestling world that basically could be there was there. But I, at the time, was poor, right? I had student loans and I was living at home and I was working, trying to pay those off and save up money so that I could move out, right, and be a real adult. And they were all, you know, all the wrestling media were, especially the Flo guys, were kind of sitting around a table, and they were having conversations about adding people, right? They knew that they were going to expand soon, and there was a couple people that they were looking at. So, you know, myself, Mike Mal, Andrew Spey, guys like that, who now all work for Flo, were kind of in that conversation. And then around the time of Who's Number One, I went up to cover it. And Willie told me that I could sit at the media table. And he got my number there. And he said, hey, you know, I don't know when, but we're going to have a spot opening up. So, you know, here's my number and I'll be calling you. And yeah, a few months later, they gave me a call. And I did a test event for them where right. it was actually the Pan Am Olympic qualifier. It was down in Frisco, Texas. Yeah, and I had booked a ticket, and I was going to go. I hadn't bought tickets to the actual event, but I was like, there's no way I'm not going to be able to get tickets when I get there. It's in Texas. So I was like, if they don't let me cover it, I'll just watch it, you know, and I'll be there, and it'll be awesome. But they said, hey, why don't you come down here and cover it for us? And so I did, and then, I don't know, maybe a month later they offered me, and then I finally officially got the job, I guess, in April, maybe, May, and then kind of had to finish out my job at home, and then the day after July 4th, I drove down to Austin.
Oh, wow. And you've been there ever since?
Been here ever since.
It's pretty cool.
All right. So we'll move on. Let's talk about Final X a little bit. That's something that's pretty recent, pretty specialized in Jude and my era of wrestling knowledge. But I want to start with the women's team, and that's something I've definitely learned more about and has been more promoted, I'd say, by Flo and other media, and USA Wrestling has definitely put that on a higher pedestal for sure. But I know this is something that you know a lot more about than most media personnels, and I feel like you have a much wider knowledge of this. Could you just talk about our team and how we can perform this year in Kazakhstan?
Sure. Yeah, I think when I was brought on to Flo, it was largely my senior level and international level knowledge and just my passion for it. Right. I was always staying up late watching the international events and just following everything because, again, it's the most important thing, right? It's to give these guys and girls something to strive for. As for the team this year, it's looking pretty strong, right? I mean, we have a defending world champ in Adeline Gray. We have a few wrestlers who wrestled for a medal last year, right? In terms of Force Molinari, in terms of Chikara Winchester, and then a few who won medals in Sarah Hildebrandt and Tamara Mensah Stock, as well as Allie Reagan, who has previously won, 5 medals between age level and senior level, including 2 silvers on the senior level. And I believe Whitney Conder has also won a world medal going back a few years, or at least I believe she's wrestled for one. So we have a lot of potential medalists on this team. And then Kayla Miracle was ranked number 1 last year, would have been the top seed.
Right.
But she got upset and this year had to beat a returning bronze medalist. So
yeah. And there are only 3 weights there that are not returning medalists, which is pretty cool.
And it's great. We're also developing a lot more depth at these weights, and so that's good to see too.
Yeah. So I think what you guys will see, what your fans will see, because I'm hoping that a lot of the people that listen to this are kind of around your age and that they follow you guys as you progress through media, that what they're going to see is that the current cadets and juniors that we have are going to, I would say, the next, probably the next Olympic cycle, maybe 2021 to 2024, is going to kind of be the start of maybe a golden age of women's wrestling, because the depth and the amount of women's wrestlers that we have now, right? Because part of this is numbers. Part of this is just getting girls and women involved in the sport so that there's just a bigger pool of bodies to choose from, right? And coaches to go and coach these athletes up. And so I think that, while this team is good, the teams we're going to have in 4 or 5 years are going to be even better because of the foundation that they're laying right now.
Especially with the RTCs right now, including women's wrestling, like Hawkeye Wrestling Club is huge, and then Tar Heel. And then NCAA wanting to add women's wrestling as a D1 sport in 2020 will be something huge, I'm hoping, for our country's wrestling.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you know if that would be freestyle or folkstyle?
Well, there's a lot of questions about exactly what needs to happen right now. What I would say right now is we need to just be supportive of the movement, and one of the problems right now almost is the pool of teams is growing almost too quickly to the point of not knowing where all these coaches and athletes are going to come from.
Right.
And now that's mainly at the lower levels, right? The Division II, Division III, NAIA level, and even some junior colleges. But it's going to be really interesting to see what happens if the emerging sports status is achieved and they meet the proper they meet the guidelines to become a Division I sport because there's just going to be a difference in resources, right? There is a difference in resources between what Iowa has, what a Big Ten school has, and what the current landscape of WCWA schools have.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm definitely excited for the future of women's wrestling. And I definitely think that with the encouragement from the men's coaches and such, like Ronnie Perry is going to be the head coach at Lock Haven for women's wrestling. That's really encouraging. And then the Brands brothers are talked about a lot as great women's coaches. So super excited for that. I don't think there's much more that I have to talk about on the women's side, but let's get over to the men's side.
Let's do it.
All right, men's freestyle. So, just say, here's the results. In case you were under a rock and you don't know what happened, but Dane Fix is our 2019 World Team member over Gilman in 3 matches. We didn't get to do our picks this time. But Sam, who were you taking going into that match?
I picked Fix.
Fix in 2 or 3?
I'm never going to pick anybody in 3.
All right. Okay. So what were your thoughts from this match?
Well, it was obvious that we've got an evolving wrestler in Dayton Fix and Gilman, who's didn't evolve near as much as Dayton Fix, and we knew going into the match that whoever was able to make the adjustments in more levels and in more positions was going to be the guy to win. And they both had opportunities to make so many adjustments. And you know what's interesting is I feel like everybody says they don't watch any film, right? Jaden Cox, he's adamant that he does not watch any film and he doesn't game plan and stuff like that. He just goes out there and wrestles. And I totally understand that. But if you look at Fix's match and his series with Gilman, both ways, did it not look like both those guys were watching a bunch of film and doing a bunch of game planning for each other?
I mean, you can game plan for a person without, like, watching film. Like, they've wrestled
That's
each
true.
Other, like, 3 or 4 times. So they know
true.
What each other do.
Yeah.
And you can have, like, this mental image in your head, but you don't necessarily
right.
have to go and study to prepare yourself for a wrestler. But, yeah, adjustments were made. That was clear. And whoever makes the most adjustments is going to win. So, Nomad, what did you think of this set, or I guess this match?
Well, I don't want to stomp too much on what we did on FRL, but the story to me was Dayton's ability to score off of Gilman's leg attacks. And I actually misspoke on FRL. Dayton scored 17 points, 12 of them were off Gilman's leg attacks, plus the one gut wrench that came off of a scramble where he scored off of Gilman's leg attacks. So,
oh my gosh!
So right? is it Dayton's defense or is it Gilman's poor offense?
Well, I don't think Gilman has poor offense, right? I mean,
right,
he's,
relatively
you know, guy,
poor.
But I think his single either his single has not progressed from, you know, 2016, 2017, when he was a senior in college, or to the point you guys were talking about, it has become scouted and people have made adjustments. And it's probably a little bit of both, honestly, where when you're not progressing and people are used to it, they know what to do. But, I mean, this has been Dayton's MO since forever, you know. And I have been critical of Dayton for not being – a terribly offensive wrestler, right? I mean, look at his matches with Suriano. Right? He doesn't cut loose, and part of that's because he is very brilliant when it comes to positioning, and is probably more reluctant than the average high level wrestler to shoot because of that, and because he knows his defense is so good. But yeah, I would say that I feel really good when Dayton's. When Dayton's getting shot on at the senior level, but I'm going to need to see more offense out of him too before I become convinced he can win a world title this year.
Yeah, you need both.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's something that's been what everybody says about Dayton Fix for a very long time is his leg attacks are never there. And I agree. And I definitely see some progression in that area, and I definitely see Fix improving and working towards more leg attacks in his matches. But it's still not to the level where he needs it to be if he wants to win a world title, just like he said.
It's really big for someone at this level to, like, every time he's getting shot on, he's scoring. He scored 17 points defensively. That's really big. And to be able to keep your head when guys are in on your legs, it's very important.
Especially at this weight class.
Right, right.
This is the little guy's weight class. It's not Gwizdowski, who he didn't really need to take too many shots, but these guys are going to be high-paced, very quick, and very defensively sound. Everybody's going to be like that. He needs to be able to attack and be able to score from his leg attacks.
And I don't want to step on the podcast that you guys did. I know you did a very good recap of Rutgers where you guys were there in person. But going back to the Yanni Zane match, look at the adjustments that Zane made as far as where on the body, where on the legs he attacked.
Right.
All low shots.
Yanni, how he got him off the mat, how he did that low single stuff. And I think it just made it much more difficult for Yanni to scramble out of it, right?
Well, Yanni's knees and hips are so elusive. And when Zane was able to shoot down below, there was nothing to bend to move Zane's lock around and his head. So I definitely think it was a really smart adjustment on Yanni's part, or on Zane's part. And that's something that's very similar, that it's just it's all adjustments from match to match, especially with this non-medalist weight class where they wrestled the U.S. Open and then they have a best 2 out of 3. I mean, we saw 4 matches between Gilman and Fix this year. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys, what say you? We move on to 61 kilograms, up the rung a little bit. Tyler Graff over Joe Colon, who was a returning world medalist, in 3 matches. So that was that was crazy. I was completely lost going into this match. Like, I just had no clue who to take. Part of it is I didn't study enough of Graf. I didn't really know what he was bringing, and that's bad on me. But I was still really lost going in this, and it just looks very optimistic from here on out. So, Sam, what do you think?
I definitely had no idea how this match was going to play out. These are 2 guys that are just gunslingers, and I mean, Graf won't stop shooting, and Colon has unreal defense. So it's definitely a matchup that's crazy interesting, but has the potential to be 33-26. So we didn't get to see that. What I kind of want to talk about is how Graf's offense will play out on the world stage. And we got a question from that this week, and that's from Law Wrestling. And it says, Graf obviously has enough offense to win on the world stage. Do you think he will be as cautious while finishing on the foreigners as he was with Colon? Chest wrap, though.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not the best one to ask for this. I haven't watched enough Tyler Graf. But I can definitely for radio.
I definitely think that Colon's defense and Colon's wrestling is very much like some foreigners and some foreigner style. Obviously, the Japanese wrestlers and the Iranians are all different, but their contrasting styles to Americans is a little bit similar in the way that they wrestle. So I'll have to say that Colon does wrestle more like a foreigner than he does like an American. In his stance, he's got very straight legs and bent over back. And his defense, his chest wrap, his gut wrench, that's all foreigner abilities. So I definitely think that it's very similar. And it was a great test for Graf for the World Championships.
Especially in freestyle, it's always okay to be a little tiny bit cautious when you're finishing your shots.
Right.
Because, you know, stuff happens. You see crazy videos of, they're finishing the shot and then they get flipped all the way through and then they're on their back. So, just keeping a level head going forward. But offense is always the key to victory in my book. So,
yeah. What do you think, Nomad?
I am so curious about Graf. So, first of all, again, you know, this is a point I brought up on FRL, but I believe that this is the first time a men's freestyle medalist has been upset. Returning medalist who is sitting out to the finals has been upset. So that's, you know, that's a good feather in Graf's cap, right?
Right.
And, you know, he's a veteran, right? He's 30 years old. So not that a guy like Dayton isn't going to take this seriously, because Dayton, you know, is an ultra serious wrestler. But when you're 30 years old, you know the window's short, right? And you know that take advantage of every opportunity. And I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch his interview after, but both the one he did on the mat with Brian Hazard and the one that he did after he got off the mat in the mix zone. But you can just tell that his mental state's a little different this year. And when you combine a guy who is very willing to shoot, who has both a gut wrench and a leg lace, with the mindset that, you know, he's with coaches that make him feel very comfortable right now.
Right.
And it's a non-Olympic weight in a pre-Olympic year, which, you know, we've only seen it one time. But in 2015, the non-Olympic weights were definitely easier.
Right.
Yes, for sure.
Everybody's trying to qualify their weight for the Olympics. And I'm not trying to knock Graf and say that he went an easier weight, but just on the world level, it's very likely going to be an easier weight than 57 or 65. So, you know, he gets on top of people, and it's maybe a little easier competition. Yeah, man, he can ball some people up, and I would not at all be surprised if he was going to medal, but we've never seen him really on the world level outside of, you know, he's been overseas a few times, he's wrestled at Pan Ams, but there's that wild card aspect of they don't have a lot of film on him, but he also has never been to Worlds before, so we really have no idea.
Right.
Right. And then, I mean, going off that point about it being a weaker weight class just because of all the guys possibly moving up or down, the weight class is definitely thinned out with Rashidov leaving and Aliyev leaving. I mean, the top guy right now, and Russia's top guy, is Bogomoyev, who, I mean, I don't really know much about. I don't know what kind of medals he's won, but I've just seen a lot of guys kind of move out of that weight class. The Georgian Lomtadze is pretty good. What do you know about Bogomoyev?
Oh, man. So, again, this is why I like talking to you guys, because you're very because you are so young and you kind of have a short memory. So it's all new to you guys right now. I think that's so awesome that you're really showing interest in the senior level. But Bogomoyev was actually a guy who was Russia's rep in 2014 and 2015 at those world championships.
And barely wiped my butt 2014. Right.
And actually was very controversially the loser at Russian Nationals in 2016 at 57 kilos. But he's a guy who he is Buryatian, which is kind of, you know, you hear a lot about Dagestanis and Ossetians. So he's kind of from a traditional part of Russia when it comes to wrestling. And he has, you know, some of the best go-behinds that you're ever going to see. But he's kind of lazy out there, right? He's very content to win a 3-1 match. So,
which,
you know,
will be interesting against Graf, because Graf does not do that.
Right. So, you know, if his shots are clean, because, again, you know, he could be playing right into his hands with those excellent go-behinds. But, you know, Graf's not necessarily going to have to put up a whole lot of points to beat him.
Yeah. What do you think about the NJRTC's effect on Graf, and kind of? I just feel like Rhys Humphrey has an unreal ability to relate to his wrestlers, Like, he can be crazy with Pat Downey and then be just totally down to earth with Tyler Graff. I think the NJRTC has a great future. And just Rhys Humphrey in general. I don't know if that's where he's going to stay for the rest of his coaching career. But I feel like wherever he goes, he's going to have a successful time.
For sure. I think, you know, Rhys's dad, Rhys's dad was a Olympic silver medalist, or maybe world silver medalist, but he definitely won a silver medal at the world level. And right. then was an excellent, excellent coach for years and years and years at the highest level. And I did an interview with Rhys after, basically right after the Graff interview was over. And he said something that, you know, was kind of joking in that Rhys way, but he also might have been serious. He's like, man, you know, I'm getting to a point where I'm almost wondering if I wasn't supposed to wrestle, I was supposed to coach. Right.
Right.
He doesn't mean that he never should have wrestled, but he means he's really found his calling with coaching. And not only Rhys, you know, Coach Pritzloff was with when he was at Wisconsin too. So it's just a lot of familiar faces around Graff right now. And the book on him has always been, I don't know what to call it, because I don't know the guy very well, but you know, you hear wrestlers all the time talk about their mental state, right? And I think just Graff's mental state is better than it's ever been, partially because of himself and his family, you know, but also because of these coaches maybe just can connect to him a little better than the other coaches he's had in the past, right? I mean, I'm sure you guys have coaches. You have 10, 20, 30 coaches that you see over the course of a year, but there are, you know, there's that one or two that you really connect with.
Right. Right. Yeah, okay. That totally makes sense.
Well, great talk from the lightweights, but coming up next, we were going to continue this Final X Lincoln train, and then we were going to finish with some awesome questions from some fans. All this and more after the break.
What's up, wrestling fans? If you're looking for a visual accompaniment to our podcast, please be sure to check out the awesome photos at wrestlersarewarriors.com. Tony Rotundo is the photographer behind these photos, and he's a great friend of ours. His photos are amazing. Go see her for yourself at wrestlersarewarriors.com. Thanks again, guys.
Break. We are here talking about Final X Lincoln and 70 kilograms, James Green over Ryan Deacon in two matches. You know, I know personally, I still just thought it was going to be Green in the end, even though Deacon won at the U.S. Open. You know, he's the veteran. He's been on, I don't know how many world teams, like five.
He's been on the team since 2014. Well, no, he lost to Marable, didn't he?
He did.
He did. Okay, so 2015, 16, 17, 18.
Right.
Right?
A lot of teams. He's basically said, like, hey, this is my spot. So I never really doubted James Green to go out and get it done. Sam, what are your thoughts from this match?
Well, overall, I think it was all Ryan Deacon until about 2 days before Final X. And then James Green got this thing called dad strength. I love that joke that people were talking about, the dad strength kicking in fast. But anyway, I thought it was really cool. I love seeing the passion and the energy in not only James Green's matches, but his interviews too. He was just moving on. He talked about how I'm done wrestling the 4-3 matches. I'm gonna win 2-1. He's just done doing that, and it excites me. It excites me as a fan, as a wrestler, as a USA supporter. That's something that excites me, and that's something that I feel is the USA style. I think when we go to the World Championships, we have a pace, and we're going out there to score as many points as we can, and that's our style.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what we need. And that's what David talks to us at M2. He talks to us all the time about not giving a guy a chance. Like, just never, ever, ever giving him even a chance to come back and win. Like, if you get up, you know, 6 points, 8 points, 10 points, you better just shut them away. You better start. If you're scoring that many points on him, you tech him or you pin him and you get off the mat. And it sends a message, really sends a message. Like, you know, I could have coasted for these last 2 minutes, last 3 minutes of the match, but no, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get off the mat quicker than everyone else would.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but I love that idea that James Green is kind of turning into more of a offensive, because he's got the skills and he's got the partners and he's got the training. He's got the skills to be the best wrestler in the world. And he proved that in 2017 that he was right there in Paris when he wrestled Chimizo in the finals, who is a formidable opponent. That's for sure.
To say maybe still up in the air about Frank Chimizo.
Yeah.
I don't really know yet. Nomad, do you think James Green is going to medal this year?
I do. Again, getting back to that mindset thing, like, it's just so obvious now. I don't know if he had a conversation with his wife or with his coaches or with JB or just himself, and it's like, man, you know, I can put points on the board. I am a good wrestler, man. And of course, James is capable of winning those ugly matches, but, you know, it's like in Happy Gilmore, man. If you just get a hole in one, you don't have to putt, you know?
Exactly.
Like, if you just take him down and lace him up, it's over. You get off the mat, you're done. Like, next round. Quarterfinals, get it over.
Why even have, like, two periods? Just wrestle one period and just tech him. Like, you don't even need to worry about that.
Yeah. He's capable to win those close matches, but he's also capable to lose them. I mean, two of his losses this year, one to Zakoyev from Russia and one to Deacon. That's not counting the Dave Baev loss, but he lost 4-3 to Zakoyev and 7-6 to Ryan Deacon. So he's capable of losing those tight matches as well as winning them.
But
he can stay in there till the finish. Yeah, sorry, Nomad, what were you going to say?
It's a mindset thing with him. And again, you know, non-Olympic weight, Russia is incredibly deep at this weight, even if they don't send the returning Gassi Magomedov, who may go up to 74. That's good. A bunch of these guys. So if he walks in as the favorite on paper, I would say no. But when we see the James Green, who is not afraid to attack, because you know, some guys, when they get in that attacking mindset, they get sloppy, right? But James Green isn't the guy often, you know, I mean, I know he had the loss to Deacon at the Open. Maybe you could say that was a little sloppy. But generally speaking, James Green doesn't get sloppy, right? He just gets tight. And if he can wrestle with the same, you know, efficiency and the same technique that he does when he's tight and wins 2-1, then all of a sudden he's winning 8-1.
For sure. His takedown transition into a turn is phenomenal. And that could be the difference in Nurse Schultz. It is so good. And his leg attacks set him up perfectly. He's got that JB type low double, and then his single legs are phenomenal, where he can just transition right into a lace. And as we saw in Lincoln, just roll up a guy for the tech in 16 seconds.
That's for sure. Hey guys, I gotta go super duper quick. You guys keep it going.
Okay. Let's move on to Burroughs Martinez.
Oh boy.
This one might take a little bit of time just because of how intense it was. Three matches. I don't know. People knew Martinez had a shot, and then Burroughs talked about how he was gotten a lot better, and Martinez said he's the best he's ever felt, and we definitely saw one of the best Martinez's, if not the best, ever. And I believe that competition is great in any circumstance. I mean, competition leads to, what's the word? Innovation. And it leads to guys that know that their spot is not a guarantee. And I don't want to diss anybody that Snyder has wrestled or other guys win world spots with not so tough opponents, but Burroughs over the years wrestled Howell, Dake, Taylor, Martinez. Now, I mean, he's got some legends that he's having to beat out for just the spot. So he's a guy that doesn't have it easy, and that's good. I think it's very good. But despite all those guys, he's made 9 straight world teams. How's he going to look this year at Worlds?
He's going to look damn good. I asked him, and man, I feel bad because I sometimes when you're in interviews, right, and there's people firing off questions, you're just trying to get your questions off. And I don't know if this came out the right way, but I wanted him to talk about Sitikov, and he reminded me and the rest of the world he's never lost to the same guy twice, right? So he, you know, Sitikov's the returning champ, the Russian. He's the guy who beat JB in the quarters last year. And so, you know, JB beat up Chamizo at the Kolov. I mean, he beat him up. And he had close ones with Beksad. Yes, he had close ones with Franklin Gomez. And both of those guys are training at Penn State, you know, with that excellent coaching staff. But I just think that the version of Burroughs that they saw, you know, at the Kolov and at Pan Ams is not even going to be close to the version of JB that they're going to get at the World Championships. And so to me, it's really just a matter of, can Burroughs get through Sitikov, which, you know, he lost on a last second step out last year. So it's not as though you're like, oh man, he got taken down 5 times and just moved around the mat and beat up, right? That doesn't happen to Jordan Burroughs, right? It's all within the margins. So,
right.
He goes in as, you know, number one or number two in my book.
Yeah, that match was a last second. It was a last second takedown for Burroughs, and then last split second for Sitikov, which stung so bad. I remember watching that. Man, it hurt. But
hey guys, I'm back. I'm just,
what's up, dude?
Yeah, I had to go wrestle a bear super duper quick.
Okay.
You know how it is. But continue. I do. Continue.
You said Gazzy might move up from 70?
He might. That Willie's been beating that drum for a while, but I tell you, man, the way Russia operates, when you are the defending champ, you have a lot of advantages, and I would be very shocked if they did not send a reigning world champ at an Olympic weight.
Well, they sent Sitikov last year over Savalov, who was returning silver.
Yeah, and I would say
legitimately beat him.
He beat Chamizo at the Alans tournament, and Sabalov lost to Chamizo where'd he lose to him? Euros.
Yeah, so that was definitely a factor. I didn't take that into account. Do you think that Gazzy has a chance of knocking off Sitikov this year?
Ah, man. I love Gazzy so much. He's one of my favorite Russians, and he has evolved quite a bit from the version that we saw in 2015. That is going to be a 2-1 match, you know, a 3-2 match. And while Gazzy has incredible length and he has maybe the best lefty overhook in the world, like, I don't know how you score on that guy. Sitikov has that very indescribable capability of just finding a way to win. Just even kind of coming up, you saw it, and he didn't necessarily win everything, but I guess he's kind of like that guy who I would say in high school was like number 8. You know, he was like number 8 in the rankings. And then in college, he was like a number 4 or 5 guy. And then, like, just, like, on this slow ascent. And now he's on the senior level, right? He's 24 years old, whatever, and he's the number one guy. And it's just, right. like, he's been on this slow but just completely perfect trajectory to time his peak at the best age, right? Like 24 to 27 is when you want to be at your best. You don't want to peak as a 18-year-old. You know, you want to peak when your body and your mind are at their best.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So you think going into last year, how confident did you feel in Burrow's winning world title versus how confident do you feel this year?
I was more confident last year just because there were fewer guys, right? I thought it was just Chamizo last year.
Right.
Even given the way that he won in 2017, where he was behind in every single match, I just thought, you know, Chamizo for me was the only guy that could give him a match. And obviously he beat him, you know.
Yeah, he got it done against Chamizo.
The last time that they wrestled before Worlds, he lost to Chamizo.
Right.
But this year, there's now Chamizo and Sitikov, and then, again, you know, Gomez and Bexod have given him tough matches, and Bexod has beaten him before, although it was a while ago, and I think it was basically a fluke because, given the circumstances of where his mind was probably at in 2016. So I'd say I was more confident in JB last year, but it's millimeters, right? It's a matter of degrees.
Yeah, you're
100%. That makes sense. Man, I sure hope he's able to win a world title. He's pretty John Smith's record. Wouldn't it tie it this year?
Yeah, it would tie it. And, you know, I want to get back to the thing about the 9 straight world teams. I wanted to write an article on this, but I don't know if I'm going to end up doing it now. But, you know, in basketball, right, everybody has that LeBron-MJ debate, you know, and part of it is, LeBron at this point is putting up stats that are just absurd, right? Like just the cumulative body of work over the course of his career. And that's kind of where JB's getting, man. Like, you know, the only other guy to make more world teams than him is Bruce Baumgartner.
Right. Which, you know, he made like 12.
He made 15.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
He basically has every medal possible to earn.
He won 13 medals and made 15 straight teams.
Straight?
Yes, 15 straight. But, you know, maybe you could say heavyweight's a little different, you know, not to disparage what Big Bruce did because he is so incredible. But, you know, theoretically speaking, you look at the bell curve of human weight distribution, you know, and Burroughs is top of it, where 163 pounds, just in terms of, like, how big humans are, is probably, theoretically, the toughest weight both in America and in the world. Right. And so to make nine straight teams at a middleweight with all those guys that he's gone through. And then if he wins this year and ties Smith's record, it just puts the stats in a position where it's just, you know, OK, now there's no question. Right. It's either a personal preference thing whenever you ask somebody, but it's either John Smith or Jordan Burroughs. And there's no argument if he has 6 titles and 9 straight teams.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would be insane. And then next year Olympics, if he's able to win that seals the deal, doesn't it, for GOAT?
Well, I mean, I think he's the GOAT right now because of the different eras he's had to go through, because of the quality of competition domestically. Because of just the way he's evolved and just, you know, all the different things that he's good at, right? Edge wrestling, parterre, all this stuff. But, you know, you ask a lot of coaches this and they'll say greatness is consistency, right? Or vice versa. Consistency is greatness. And John Smith won 6 in a row, and no other American, including Jordan Burroughs, has won more than 3 in a row. And when you say it like that, it's just, man, it's going to be hard for a lot of people to say that Burrows is the GOAT when John Smith won 6 freaking titles in a row.
So many. It's like more than I have fingers on one hand. Sorry, that's just a dumb joke. I don't know why I said that. Oh, man. All right, what say you guys? We move on from 74 and on to 97 kilograms. Because we still have questions to get to, too. So.
Oh, yeah. There are 2 points that I kind of want to get to in this Snyder match, Snyder-Gadsden.
All right, what are they, Sam?
The one is the gut wrench, and the two is Snyder's age.
Okay.
So let's jump in on the gut wrench.
All right, tell us. What are your thoughts on this gut wrench, Sam?
Nomad, how is the gut wrench actually going to help him? I feel like there's no way he gets a gut wrench on Sagulayev. And I feel like it's a great tool for him to have. But Magomedov has been a guy to beat Snyder. And then, I just don't see anybody else with the ability to beat Snyder on his way to the finals. Maybe it's a tool to help him get to it with more energy. But, I mean, what kind of an effect will the gut wrench and his parterre offense actually play in Kazakhstan in September?
Getting to the finals easier, you know? He's taken some losses over the years. Now the only one he's in at the, you know, the final show is to Sagulayev. But I think he knows he has to evolve in his wrestling. And I mean, look, going back to 2015, the first year he won, his first match he won 2-1 on stepouts, right?
Oh my.
So he's had some dicey ones in there, and just the ability to, I mean, it's just so obvious, right? Whether it's folk style, freestyle, getting a takedown into a turn, right? Turning 2 points into fours and sixes and eight, it just makes life easier on you, you know?
And also practically, like, you get on top and it's not like, all right, now we just wait 10 seconds and it'll set us back up. It's like, if you're working, that means the guy on bottom is working too. It's not giving the guy on bottom a break. And that's mentally, it like wears them down, you know, having to defend a Kyle Snyder gut wrench for, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds. It's tough. So, you know, it's only good to add more offense.
Right. And his strength is inhumane. That's got to be an insanely tight gut wrench.
Yeah.
I would hate to have been Kyvan Gadsden right then.
Bet his ribs weren't feeling too good.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you think about his age, Sam? What are your thoughts about his age?
Well, I mean, he's made 4 world teams. That's his 5th, right? This is his 5th world team, / Olympic. He made 1 Olympic team for a 23-year-old. So that's 4 years ahead of JB. No.
3.
4. Hold on. JB's at 9. So it's, 3 years ahead of JB. I mean, will he be able to keep it up until he's 37? I don't see the competition at 97 being anywhere near the same level of competition at 74. And then he says, I know he did an FRL interview with Flo about a year ago, and he said he wanted to compete till he's 37, and he's treating his body like that. Will he be able to keep it up? And if he does, that will be kind of insane.
Also, and then how old would Sagulayev be then? Because
he'd be like 18
at
in
least,
Russian years.
At least 18 or 19, probably. Yeah. He has his birthday every quarter. Every Olympic cycle, he gets 1 year. No, you know what would make sense? If his birthday was on leap day. And so every 4 years he'd have his birthday. And then that explains his slow aging.
Well, I thought his birthday was on Russian Victory Day.
Yeah, but, okay. You know what? You got me there, Sam. Found a youth.
But anyway, do you think that he peaked early, or that he's just that good and he's going to be the same like JB?
Man.
Who are you asking the question to, Sam?
Yeah, you want me?
Let's start with Nomad. Let's start with Nomad's thoughts.
All right.
Okay, that was rude.
I want to hear Jude's thoughts on this, but I'll start, and then I'll let the young man go. Man, I'll tell you. So I know we're talking about Snyder, but just like to put into perspective, kind of the insanity of like age. So on the women's side, right? There's this 50-kilo wrestler Yui Susaki from Japan, right? And right. Basically, we're all like, this girl is absolutely incredible. And after, you know, after she won like her first year out of cadets, she was 18, like actually 18, not like Sedge Live 18.
Right.
And, you know, me and a bunch of other people are like, all right, well, this is a wrap, you know, have fun chasing this girl for the next whatever. And somebody tweeted like, all right, well, for her to beat Yoshida, right, the Japanese wrestler that Helen Marullis beat to win her gold medal, it was something like 2034. Like, she would have to win every title from now until 2034.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Or something absurd. That's some absurd later date and time. And you're like, that's not even –
not even feasible.
Right. So, look, Father Time is undefeated. And there are a few extremely special people who, through a combination of great genetics and incredible work ethic and, luck with injuries.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's been a big part of it for Burroughs, right? All of these things. It's just really, really, really difficult to predict someone wrestling and making teams and winning medals until they're 37 years old.
Yeah, I mean,
that makes sense.
I mean, Nomad, you really hit all the points I was gonna make. But you know, if there's anyone who has a work ethic like that, who like, I mean, it's one thing to be like, yeah, I'm gonna compete until I'm 37. But Kyle Snyder actually believes like, I'm just gonna keep competing. I can keep going. I can go forever. That mental thing is like it's a big picture, I guess. But of course, you know, he's been extremely lucky. I don't know if has he ever been injured? Is this anything that has ever happened?
His hand was taped up at Final X.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might be like a dog bite.
But the work ethic is almost a concern though, right? Is he going to be one of those guys who, when he gets, you know, I mean, if you saw the Terry documentary, right? Like he said, I cannot train like I did when I was 24. I just, my body won't allow it. He had to completely change his training. And hopefully, you know, I think Snyder will, but hopefully he realizes that and understands, hey, I simply cannot train the way I did when I was 22. And I think he will. And I think he has the right people around him that will constantly remind him of that.
Right. Okay, let's hop into some questions before it's time to go. So, our first question is from our guy, Tony Rotundo. He's our man. What do you guys think about Kale and Casey and Tervell cornering their Greco guys, which is like Provisor and Coons? I'm not sure I've seen them cornering Greco before, but is this a good sign for the growth of Greco? Sam, thoughts on this question?
Well, I think he pointed out all the facts and all the results. I think it's a great sign for Greco, and I hope that it becomes a bigger thing. I talked about women's wrestling going to the bigger programs, particularly Hawkeye Wrestling Club. And when you have Ohio State and Penn State having a Greco program in their RTCs, that's very encouraging. And something that you can tell that Greco is going in the right direction. And then with the coverage that it had at Final X, all those guys, I mean, I was able to interview and talk to the guys at Rutgers, and they were more than grateful to be there with freestyle, with women's freestyle. So I think it's a great sign people love Greco. People love the throws and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, all we need now, Sam, is for you to start loving Greco, and then, you know, it will be in a great place.
Yeah, I love Greco. I just think it's a little bit too much red light, green light kind of thing.
Okay. you know what? That sounds like, it just sounds like you're uncultured.
Okay.
And I feel like, you know, Kale and Casey and Trevelle, like, they are the coaches, and the coaches should sit in the corner and coach their wrestlers. So, I mean, I don't know why they weren't doing it before, but I do think it's
well,
a really good.
Well, a lot of times the wrestlers don't wrestle for the Nittany Lion or Ohio RTC. Right. To my knowledge, Ohio RTC has never had a Greco World Team member, but, and Kuntz is someone who has changed that culture and for the better, I hope, and more people will understand that they can go to Ohio State and still be successful in Greco. Except they do talk a lot about how Brady and Dylan Kuntz are very separate from the group at Ohio State, that they're not really involved in the coaching and everything. They just kind of get off in the corner and kill each other.
Nice.
What do you think, Nomad?
I this is a really good question. I'm not really sure how to feel about it. I think we're a leg grabbing country, right? By our history,
right.
You know, when they decided to start the NCAA tournament in 1928, they decided to make it a leg grabbing tournament. So I think Greco's just always had this uphill battle to face. And while I am completely supportive of the college programs, you know, getting behind their guys who want to do Greco, I think it's generally speaking better if they kind of have their own RTCs, their own places to go, but not just Northern Michigan. You know, I think the Illinois RTCs is doing a good job getting some Greco guys together. And I know it's something that Medlin prioritizes, but I just, not to have separation of church and state, but I just think that because of how different Greco is from folk style, ultimately what's going to end up happening is there's going to need to be colleges who are kind of more exclusive to the Greco training. But, you know, it's great to see that colleges are getting behind their guys no matter the style.
Right. And I mean, that could be solved by, like, just maybe hiring a Greco coach or having, you know, RTC practices specifically for Greco. But, you know, hopefully in the future. All right. We have two questions left. Here we go. What does the amount of young or early college competitors in Final X mean for our sport? Is there anything special about the fact that Schultz, Kuntz, and Bay are all 21 or under in a style typically dominated by old man strength, as many on Twitter put it? I know we've talked about this a lot on our show. You know, both me and Sam are pretty darn young. But it's only good, right? Having kids start at an early age and looking up to, you know, Dane Fix is like less than 5 years older than I am. And that's not a whole lot of time. And so identifying these goals, like, from an early age, it really helps grow the entire sport of wrestling. So really, I think it's good. Also, the three guys that he named were all Greco guys. So maybe Elliot Clausen is a Greco fan. Just a thought.
I think his question is Greco focused because he said in a style typically dominated by old man strength. So I think what he's saying is Greco is a very strength related, muscle related, and that comes with age. And it's very rare for boys to be successful at that, in that style, I think is how he was putting it.
All right, maybe. Elliot, DM me. Nomad, what do you think about this?
I think it is a big indication of the specialization in training that youth wrestlers and just youth athletes in general get in this country. The training available to you guys is even way different than what I could have had available to me. And so it's just easier to be stronger and more developed when you're younger now because weight plans are better, because nutrition is better,
right,
because sports science is better. And so it's just easier to reach that physical maturity easier because, I mean, look, there is a physical component to gut wrenching someone, right? Like you need a butt, right?
Yeah.
Better term. Like I guarantee you, Sam, how much do you weigh?
80 pounds.
All right. Jude, how much do you weigh?
Like 125.
Okay. Sam, I guarantee you, when you get to Jude's weight, gut wrenches will be easier simply because you will have more power.
Right.
You will have a more developed body, you know, especially in like your thighs and your butt, and you'll be able to do them easier, right? And so I think that to me is an example of that, you know, Kuntz was able to develop that strength that most guys don't get until they're 25 when he's 18, 19, 20.
Right.
It's a credit to all of the strength coaches in this country.
For sure.
Okay. Well, I think that about does it for this episode of Home Mat Advantage Wrestling Podcast. It was episode 13. I have two shout-outs here super duper quick. Huge shout-out to Jason Bryant for the package he sent me. Came with a bunch of different stuff and a mic, and I love it very, very much. Also, I owe shout-outs to Canadian Owen and Eric Weaver for being my partners today in practice. We were doing some dangerous throws, and they pushed me very, very hard. So thank you to those guys. Nomad, thank you to you for coming on our show. Thanks for being super-duper supportive. Thank you to all of our listeners for staying with us, you know, 13 weeks. Pretty unlucky number, but, you know, you guys have been here all the same. Sam, thank you for sticking with me and being one of the best co-hosts I could ever ask for. Do you guys have anything to say?
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you guys something.
Oh, okay.
When you guys were first starting this, right, you had a lot of questions about this. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things I kind of advised both of you guys is to not downplay your own experiences in the sport, right? You guys have a different perspective as active competitors and as guys coming up through the developmental system that I don't have, you know, as a 28-year-old who's just full-time media, right? And I'm curious to see if you guys, number one, if this podcast has changed your outlook on the sport as competitors, and two, if you plan on continuing to use your own unique outlooks to the sport to make the podcast better.
Well, Sam, you want to answer first?
Sure. Well, I'd have to say that the podcast has opened up my experiences with wrestling, and I've been introduced to so many bigger names in wrestling and different opportunities because of my media status. But I don't feel like it has changed my outlook on the sport. I feel like I've had the same outlook, and that is I love wrestling. I want to do everything wrestling, and I want to do it for as long as I can in my life. So I feel like the podcast has been a blessing, and it's something that I love doing. And like I said, I love doing everything wrestling. So it's another thing that I can do, and it's another thing that I enjoy. And then the other question was, how do I plan to use it? My outlook?
Yeah, you know, I think what part of what makes you guys, or what can make your podcast so interesting is you just, everybody else doing podcasts right now, they're adults, right? They're done competing for the most part, right? You know, except for there's a kid out in California, Chase Saldate, who's still competing, and he does a good job as well. But I just think you guys can offer different takes on the sport that people should take seriously. And you know, who cares that you're young? You know, middle and high schoolers. You guys have different interesting outlooks on the sport, and I just think you should continue
offering
one here.
Right. Well, so I know for me, weird story. Like, I grew up just hating wrestling. My dad made me do it. I didn't want anything to do with it. And then as I grew up, it sort of like clicked. And now I have a unique perspective of it. But the home ad advantage for me has really, I don't know, it's really focused me on wrestling, I guess. So when I, before I did home ad advantage, I was worried about getting my school done and then playing video games and then going to wrestling practice. Like, I spent a whole bunch of time, you know, annoying people, wasting time, and it wasn't really good for me. But, you know, home ad advantage, I want to be a good co-host. I want to provide a good experience for my listeners. And I want to sound like I know what I'm talking about. And so what I do now in my free time is I research wrestling. I focus on wrestling. And so not having to have like, all right, now we're in video games and now we're in the wrestling. Like, I made an executive decision. I just cut video games out of my life. I just don't play video games anymore. And the time that I spent on that, you know, I'm focused on wrestling. So home ad advantage really has, just shown me how much time I was wasting, and it showed me how much like energy that I was just kind of throwing away, that now I'm just putting back into not only making a good product, but focusing on my own wrestling as well. And then the second question was, how do I plan to go forward from here? Watching wrestling film for me was always like maybe a little stressful, maybe because I just didn't like wrestling, but it was always something that I just didn't want to think about. But now watching the highest level of competition and like even going to Final X Rutgers and seeing the best guys in the entire country compete in front of thousands of fans, you know, everyone's screaming and this high energy, I don't know, it seeing it in person is so much different. And so I feel like this podcast and going and traveling, seeing wrestling and watching wrestling, it helps me decide what kind of wrestler I want to be. And it shows me how important like a mental game is to it. And knowing that like, hey, I'm never out of a match. Like, remember that time Jordan Burroughs came back? Remember that time Zayn made all those adjustments? Like, you know, it builds up my confidence, I guess you could say, just knowing all this and saying like, hey, I'm not alone. I can do this. I don't know. That was a lot of thoughts that I tried to get out of my mouth pretty darn quickly. But that's all I got.
I love it.
All right. Well, again, that's it for episode 13 of Home Ad Advantage Wrestling Podcast. And we will see you next time.